Hi, it's Diane, and it is Thursday, March 21st. I'm here with a 3 o'clock group. So far, we have Holly and Susie and Linda and Julie. Who wants to start us off with check-ins and celebrations?
I can start.
Oh, yeah. Go ahead.
You can go ahead.
All right. Our son Gabriel, who's almost 15 next month, he's had a phone only for a couple of years, and it's a really crappy iPhone 4 that he can do virtually nothing on, but he can make calls and text, which is all we wanted him to be able to do. And he's been wanting a brand new phone. He wants the iPhone X and the this and the that, which costs, you know, like $1,000, and we just laugh. Anyway, we went to the store, and Linda and I upgraded our phones, and I gave him my old iPhone 6, and I was convinced that he was going to be like, this is a piece of crap, this isn't what I want, I wanted the brand new, blah, blah, blah. But he wasn't at all. He was authentically appreciative and said thank you and was really excited to have a new phone. And I was like, boy, I misjudged him. And he was, it's not all that often that he's really appreciative of something, and he really was. And that was great. That was a win.
Hey, this is Holly. I can go. We just jumped into the program, and I called, I guess it was last Tuesday, for the little coaching talk, and you gave me some advice, or somebody gave me some advice about the scaffolding. My son is 17, and he is struggling with getting motivated to do work, that really worked. He wants to do his work in another room, which we can't supervise, and he ends up just kind of messing around and not getting anything done. So the suggestion was to have him do it in his room and then check in. We would check in, and that seemed to work. I guess we just need to be consistent with that, and I think that gives him a little win and us a little win as well. So that was helpful.
I wonder where Diane went. She's not there.
You know, I am here.
Oh, I know. You're right.
I'm here, but I'm on mute, and apparently you guys can't hear me when I'm on mute, and I don't understand what the problem is.
I was like, normally she'll say something after everybody checks
yeah,
in. I don't know if they're not.
I did. No, I did. I'm sorry. It's like, and Holly just jumped right in, and I didn't realize that she didn't hear me respond because the timing was just perfect after I finished making a comment to Susie. So, Susie, congratulations on the win with Gabriel. And Holly,
thank you.
Loved the kind of step-by-step scaffolding instead of feeling like you had to just jump all the way back in and micromanage. It must have felt good to kind of tighten the reins but not go to that control place. Is that fair?
Right, yeah.
Awesome. Julie, what about you?
A few weeks ago, my 14-year-old, almost 15-year-old next month, he got into a fight at school and got suspended for 5 days. And so they told us we had to have a manifestation determination because he has a 5-of-4 plan. So, of course, that was a big panic on my part. Oh, my gosh, what is this and all that. But I studied up, I prepared, and they agreed that the fight was related to his ADHD, not direct, you know, wasn't directly caused by his ADHD, but it was certainly related based on his behaviors. And so I think it was a win. So that's good.
So that's awesome, because I'm sure it was a huge relief for you, Julie. I'm curious kind of how you involved your son in the process.
Well, he was at the meeting, and we certainly talked about it a lot. So he was able to explain what happened. I guess I didn't have him, you know, in all that stressed out prep, I didn't really involve him. But it is something he's going to have to learn, to do, you know, to advocate for himself and to sort of recognize what's going on.
Well, and that might be an interesting debrief, which is that sort of, was he glad that he didn't have to do anything, or and that you jumped in and you took care of the whole thing because it was scary for him, or did he feel like, you know, he would have wanted to say more or do something different? So it might be interesting to kind of have that conversation and see what comes up.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Okay, cool. Linda, anything else you want to throw in as celebrations besides the old iPhone 6?
It was pretty great. but, yeah, I do. So I thought of something today, and, you know, it's been coming up from time to time, and I haven't really acknowledged really how great it is that he does this, but every once in a while, we'll just be doing something. Like, I'll make him dinner, which I do every night. It's not, like, a big deal. But every once in a while, he goes, thanks. Thanks for making dinner. Or, you know, like he said, before we even went and got the phone, I came downstairs in the morning, and I didn't realize that Susie had told him we were giving him the phone. He's like, thank you so much for the new phone. You know, like, sometimes he, like, really comes through and acknowledges us for just the things that we do in our everyday. And that's, it's really nice.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and the thing I love about that is the first step is noticing it. And then the second part is letting him know that you notice it.
Yeah.
So is there something in that for you, that conversation with Gabriel? What do you notice?
Well, actually, when he says thank you, I say you're welcome always. And there have been times when I have said to him, oh, it's really nice you noticed. But I probably could do that more so that he would get that that's, like, makes a difference for people.
Well, and I think that's the self-awareness, right? So these kids don't even, they may do it automatically, but it's the emotional intelligence to see not just that you do it, but that there's value in doing it. And so when we say, you're welcome, or we say, I really appreciate you thanking me, or whatever it is, it's kind of that creates that feedback loop of why we have the habits we have in terms of gratitude and appreciation. And
right.
And the other thing that kind of comes up, Linda, is that sort of, it feels good to have people say thank you, and it feels good to have people notice when you go out of your way to do stuff, and kind of helping him to see that as well can make a difference.
Yeah.
So, cool. Awesome. Okay.
Sure.
So let me zoom back to Susie. Susie, where, and maybe you and Linda are taking aim on the same place today, but where do you want to take aim today?
That's a good question. Actually, we haven't talked about it, but I think my first reaction, and Linda, I see if you agree, is homework. And I know that's a big subject. So specifically that it gets done in a timely manner. I don't know, Linda,
tell me
how
what
would you
timely,
say it?
Tell me what timely means. That's
right.
Done by the due date.
Yeah.
Which usually will give him 2 days because he has class every other day.
Okay, so you want to take aim on helping him to make sure that his homework is done before it's due.
Yes.
Okay. So it may make sense that may be a little bit broader than preferred, because there's so many steps to homework, right? So it could be that it's about unraveling what it is that makes it hard to get it done on a timely basis. So is he getting stuck because he thinks that, you know, since he doesn't have to do it today, it gets off his radar? Is he having a hard time remembering which assignments? Is it that he's forgetting to actually turn it in, but he's doing it? Where is the sticky point from your perspective or is there more than one?
Yeah. Lynn, can you help me out on this?
Well, he actually has more than one. Because sometimes he does the homework and then he doesn't hand it in.
Mm-hmm.
But so I noticed something last night. I think what happens, getting started is hard for him.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's a task that he has not done before, it is literally impossible. So he had a new task last night, and I literally had to feed him the answers. It's like he was frozen.
He was frozen. So I guess the question is it about helping him getting started when something's brand new that he's never done before, or is there another place that you might start with your taking aim?
Well, I think that the getting started when it's new is bigger than we want to take aim on today.
Okay.
I was just bringing it up because I noticed it yesterday. I did not deal with it very well, by the way. I was like,
well, and so here's what I would say.
The answers just.
Well, and here's the thing is like what you're noticing is that he needs more scaffolding. And so the thing to think through is how much scaffolding does he really need? And how can you continue to back off piece by piece by piece by piece? Because it may be when he's completely frozen and triggered that doing three to five of them with him together would be helpful. And he might need you to say, hey, why don't we do three of them together? And then you try a few more and I'll come back and check on you. You know, so because that might be a in-between scaffolding besides, okay, I've done three, I'm out of here. You know, but it's that sort of collaborating with him on what to try in terms of the scaffolding. Does that make sense, Linda?
Yes, it does. And I think where Susie and I struggle is the scaffolding. So
tell me what the struggle is,
because
that may be the place to take aim.
Yeah. So how do we scaffold it, and are we giving too much? I mean, he is pretty dependent on us, and we really would like to be able to back off. And so for me, the question always comes up, like, have we perpetuated this dependency?
Well, I'm not sure it matters to figure out that answer. What I'm hearing you say is that you want to help him to become more independent in doing some aspects of his homework. Is that fair?
Yes.
Okay. So you want to make sure you're loosening the scaffolding, whether it's because there's habits or because he needs it. You want to make sure you're consciously going, does he really need this help, or can we back off a little bit?
Right. Because I'll tell you, when anybody says, what are you doing tonight, I always say, I have homework.
I have homework. Yeah. Well, and so that's part of the language. So, Susie, Linda, did you guys listen to the webinar Elena and I did last month on the four phases of raising independent kids and teens?
No.
No, we did not.
So I'm going to suggest you go back and listen to that. There was a link in last week's newsletter.
Okay.
If you have a hard time finding it, let me know. But the recording's still sitting out there. You just have to go back and click and listen since you're already on our list.
Can you say the name of it one more time?
It's called, wait, let me pull up the newsletter and I can tell you exactly. And then the newsletter. Wait a second. Did I get the newsletter this week? something's going on. Okay. What I'll do is I'll post that in. I don't want to take everybody's time up, but I'll post that in. But it's something like raising four keys to raising independent kids and teens. And there's a section in the bottom of the newsletter that says, here it is, that says, where are Diane and Elaine? It says, launching independent, here I found it. Launching Independent Kids and Teens, Four Stages for Parents. And it was in the newsletter this morning.
Great. Thank you.
Okay.
I got it.
So I think so let's go back to what you're taking aim on. So you're taking aim on how much you're scaffolding. So is it about scaffolding while he's doing homework? Is it about scaffolding to help him get started on homework? Let's narrow it down to some portion of homework where you feel like you might be scaffolding more than you should be.
Well, I would say, I have no problem helping him get started. I know that's hard for him. But then having him take it from there, like doing some of the work on his own.
Okay, so backing off on scaffolding after he's gotten started on his homework.
Yes.
Susie, does that feel okay?
It sounds perfect, yes.
Okay, cool, great. So, Holly,
yeah.
And I'm happy to help you take aim since this is, I'm always happy to help everybody take aim, but particularly if you need some support since this is your first call. I can't remember if you were in Sanity School or not. Does the concept of taking aim make sense? Or I can give you a little blurb on it if it would be helpful.
I read through the workbook and I've been thinking about it. And I was reading like the March topics of the buy-in. I think mm-hmm. that's where we are with
yep.
With Garrett, is that we need to. I'm ready to hand over the reins. He's 17, junior. Start, but he's just not the maturity. That's what I want to take aim on, is like either us figuring out a way to create that environment where he is more motivated, or I don't know how to do that.
Well, so hang on a second. So when you're talking about taking over the reins, so we're talking about independence, right? So it's the key here is to pick one area where you want to start, are you talking about getting buy-in for him to become more independent in some areas, or is there some area in particular where you wish he had more buy-in?
He wants to be free, but he doesn't want to work. He wants us to leave him alone, but he doesn't want to do what he needs to do for us to leave him alone, and he's not making that connection between the two.
So can I say that? It does make perfect sense, and I say it a little bit differently.
Okay.
So he wants to be independent, and his ability to be independent is different than his desire, whether it's because he's not following through consciously or his executive function is getting in the way. If you let go of the rope, he's not catching it.
Right. He would totally drown.
Well, and that's why I'm kind of saying it the way that I am, because for most of our kids, and I obviously don't know your kid, there may be a small portion that's wanting to, and a lot of it has to do with their ability to be independent and not their desire, that's different than their desire to be independent. And so we talk about this concept of scaffolding, and again, that webinar, Holly, you've got the newsletter this week as well. It's that webinar we did. We talked specifically about the different roles. And as parents, what happens is we can see really clearly level one, which is us being in charge of everything. And we have this wonderful vision of level four, which is our kids being completely in charge of something. But the reality is that the steps that need to take are the ones that sit in between, which is how do I help my kid to become more independent, not this magical day, all of a sudden we're going to wake up, we've been in charge of everything, and then tomorrow they're going to be able to be in charge of everything. It just doesn't work that way. It's like the process between crawling and walking. I mean, there's all these steps in between.
Yeah.
So if that resonates, I'm going to challenge you to pick one area where you feel like looking at how to help him to become more independent rather than letting him be more independent would be a good place to start.
Okay.
Do you?
Okay. Thanks for that.
Is there an idea that you have right now? If not, then let's listen. Let's have this conversation about buy-in, because a lot of times, an area where our kids have buy-in, it's like, I want you out of my business on X, Mom. Okay, yeah. Well, let's work together to make sure that you can, you know, do your homework, you know, be as complete as you can with your homework without me sitting on top of you and making sure you do it. Or, you know, cleaning your room or going to bed on time or whatever it is. So do you have something instinctively that pops up, or do you want to wait and decide as we're going through it?
Well, I guess what we've been trying to get him to buy into is sitting down on Sunday nights and kind of making out a schedule of his week. He's not using his agenda, but so we're just printing out like a weekly thing and just thinking about what he has to do so that hopefully he can be mindful of that. He doesn't have the buy into that, I guess. That's
okay. So hang on a second. So this says a great example. So what you're describing is the solution that you've presented to him to solve some problem. And you're trying to get buy-in to the solution. So let's take a step backwards and go, what problem are you trying to solve with the schedule?
Yeah, he's not doing his work. He's not keeping up with it.
Okay, so the problem you're trying to solve is how to help him to keep up with his work. And is it specifically work that's due over longer periods of time? Is it his day-to-day homework assignments? What is it specifically that he's having a hard time with?
It's all of it. Like, if he gets a new unit of vocabulary for his psychology class, it's like 80 vocabulary words, and it's not due tomorrow, so he puts it, you know, off, and then tomorrow never comes. So we've been trying to help him, like, kind of plan it out. Like, oh, this is due next Tuesday. I can do words a day, and we could, you know, make this easier. But that buy-in, like, he still doesn't really like plan for, you know, what's going to happen, and he, you know, next Monday night will come and he'll just freak out and he won't do anything.
Well, and so that, so you've described a lot of executive function challenges there, right? So number one is planning, and our kids, yeah. These kids don't have it. Planning doesn't come naturally to them. Number two is, you know, this concept of now versus not now, right? So an understanding of the passage of time. Well, it's not due tomorrow, so in theory, I don't have to do it tonight. I can do it at a later date, and so there's that piece of it. There, and then there's this kind of wanting to be independent. There's distractibility. I mean, you've got all these different pieces. But what I'm hearing you say that you want to take aim on is helping him to become more independent in getting work done, specifically if it's stuff that's not immediately due. Is that fair?
Yes.
And I'm going to say it the way that I'm going to say it, because your idea of sitting down on Sunday night might work for you, but two things happen. Number one, it's your idea and you've got a 17-year-old. And number two, it may not work for him.
Yeah.
So can you get the whole kind of staying with the problem instead of the solution to start?
Right, yeah.
Okay, cool. Awesome. All right, Julie, where do you want to take aim?
I just took a bite of salad, so can I take aim in a minute?
Yes, you can. Absolutely.
Sorry.
Absolutely. Well, I'm going to go ahead and start talking about motivation and buy-in. And so we're on can somebody tell me what page we're on in the workbook? Can't. There it is. 46, right? So this idea of motivation and buy-in kind of ties in into a few areas. It ties in to brain activation, because we know that if your child has ADHD or has anxiety or just has executive function challenges, that if there is motivation in place, their brain works differently. And I've heard some people with ADHD say the ADHD brain cannot do anything unless there's a motivation there of some sort. We talk about Insanity School, particularly if you guys have not listened to this in a while, go back and listen to some of the modules in Insanity School where we talk about pinch, the five areas of motivation. It's in module 5 and a little bit in module 2. But understanding what are some of the things that do motivate your child is an important piece of it. You know, so we talk about play, interest, novelty, competition, and hurry up, which is urgency. And so our kids all have different things that tend to motivate them. The other thing that ties into motivation is the idea that when our kids are younger, they're often motivated by pleasing an adult in their life, whether it's you or as their parent or their teacher or their grandparent. You know, they have that kind of external motivation just to do the right thing or just to do what they've been asked to do. As they get older, that sort of desire to please shifts, and our kids need to have different kinds of motivation. And so that's where rewards, consequences, those sorts of things come in. And as we develop and get older, our ability to set motivations for ourselves increases, and our ability to have what they call intrinsic motivation, which is kind of doing it because it's the right thing to do, comes in. But most of our kids are not there yet from the level of maturity, so they need our help to put motivation in place. It's important that we, even if you're the one that's putting the motivation in place for them, having conversations about the role that motivation plays is an important piece. I tell the story, I think, in Sanity School about my son when he was like second or third grade, where he had math problems and he divided them over two nights. And first night, he got them done in 20 minutes. The second night, it took us like 3 hours to get his homework done. It was the same number of problems. And we had a really good conversation about what was different. And he said, "Mom, my show was on the first night and I really wanted to get done because my show was on." And it helped him to see that if he had a motivation, that it was easier for him to get his homework done. And it was really very eye-opening so that he could then begin to choose motivations for himself instead of relying on me to put the motivations in place. So motivation and buy-in kind of go hand in hand, but buy-in is important because when we're taking aim on something, you want your success is pretty correlated with the amount of buy-in that you have from your kiddo. And so if you're trying to get them to change a behavior that they don't really care about but you feel is important, it's going to be very different than if you're getting them to change a behavior that they have some kind of inspiration to change as well. And that inspiration might be, I just want to get Mom off my back because she's been bugging me about X, Y, and Z forever. Or it may be that they're feeling some impact of it and it's impacting them socially or it's impacting them mentally or practically. But it's important to kind of, as you're taking aim and you're thinking about challenges that you're going to focus in on, look at how much buy-in you have for changing the situation. And I'm going to go back to what Holly was talking about. It's like we want to get their buy-in for solving the problem, and that gets us into a space of collaboration. Once we collaborate, then we focus on figuring out what he wants to try or what she wants to try, as opposed to getting buy-in specifically for a particular solution. And that's a trap that we as parents kind of get into. So what comes up for you guys around these issues of motivation and buy-in?
This is Linda.
Hi, Linda.
So Gabriel is very motivated by being able to play his Xbox. But, well, I'm saying he's motivated. The thing I've noticed about Gabriel is there is no one thing that really motivates him.
Mm-hmm.
So it's always changing. We never really know what it is. We try to ask him. We try to give new and novel things as motivation. And the one thing he always wants to do is play his Xbox, but he doesn't even get done with chores or homework or whatever to even be able to play his Xbox, and he loves that.
Okay, so hang on a second. So what you're describing is two things. One is this sort of moving thing on motivation, but what it sounds like is really going on is that even when there's a motivation in place, his ability to get something done is not there. Am I understanding what you're saying?
Because
you said even though he can get to play on his Xbox when he's done, he still can't get done because he doesn't even get to the Xbox.
Right, he can't get done. It's not that he can't do whatever the task is. He just can't get
right.
done.
Right, and so that's an indication that he needs scaffolding. So it's not just about motivation. If it was about motivation, then his ability to do it, it's that sort of kind of just try harder thing, right? So it, you know, if I said, Linda, I think I've given this, you this example, speak French. Come on, do it. I'll give you $100,000 if you speak French right now. And I want to imagine that you've never learned French. You're going to be like,
bonjour.
Diana, I'd be bonjour, right? But it's something you're not able to do. It doesn't matter how much money I offer you.
Right.
So what you're seeing is an area where he needs additional accommodations and scaffolding in order to be able to be successful. Is that fair?
Yes.
Okay. So that's the place to look, is to say, okay, so how do I help him to be successful instead of how do I motivate him to get it done?
Right. And we stumbled right there. Yes. So that is where I was talking before, like where we want to take aim, because then it becomes like, let's say, folding his laundry. So we hand him each piece and, you know, we do half, he does half. And it's like, you've been doing your laundry for years. You should be able to fold your laundry in a timely manner.
Well, do you have buy-in for him to become more independent? I mean, I know Gabriel well enough. I've been around you guys for a year almost now. Gabriel loves spending time with you. It's like,
yes,
if I could fold laundry, if I could fold laundry with my mom's or fold laundry on my own, which do you think Gabriel would pick?
Correct. I think you're absolutely right about that. He would absolutely pick to do it with us. He will pick to do with us everything, which is why I'm saying that we need to figure out when we can back off, because, like I said to him the other day.
That's the challenge to solve, right? So this sort of, yeah. Gabriel, we love spending time with you. It may be that folding laundry is his quality time, right? It's this sort of, you know, you don't take that away from him, but there may be something else. And so maybe the conversation between the three of you is, we do a lot of things together, and we know that, you know, 5 years from now, you're going to need to be doing some stuff on your own without us around. You know, let's pick one and figure out how to help you to do it more independently without us. Which one do you want to try?
Yeah.
And he might pick laundry. He might pick something else.
Yeah.
I think that's good.
So what's important out of that, Susie? What's important out of that?
Well, just first of all, to engage with him, and also just the realization yet again that sometimes he's just waiting for us to help him because he just wants to be with us versus he's, you know, being a pain in the ass. you know what I mean? It's like,
yeah.
to really appreciate that, because he'll never say it, so it's, I don't know, that was just eye-opening for me to be reminded that he does, in fact, like to be with us, because sometimes
he does.
It doesn't feel
he does
way.
A lot, right?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Well, and maybe if it's important to you to have him to make sure he can fold his laundry on his own, then maybe it's, hey, you know, once a week you do it on your own and on Sunday we'll do whatever's left or, what, you know, whatever it is. But it's that sort of,
right.
Why don't you fold your laundry and then let's go read a book together, you know, if it's the combination of the two. But you're solving two problems. Is one is, how do you get him quality time with you? And two is, how do you get his laundry folded? And the question I want to ask is, where are you catastrophizing in the process, right? So if he can't fold his laundry on his own, what story are you telling yourself?
Oh, well, Linda's the catastrophizer. Linda, why don't you tell her?
Yeah. You know, he's going to live with me forever. But the truth is, I'm getting to the point where who cares if he folds his laundry? I am really getting there. Like, there are more important things in life than folding your laundry.
Yep, it's true. All right. So, yeah. Who else? What other thoughts are coming up from the people?
Well, this is Julie, and I'll share that it applies to adults too. The motivation thing. It's a 54-year-old doesn't want to do something or isn't motivated to do it, he's not going to do it. He just, it's like almost like he physically can't. And so just a warning for you guys, much as I love my husband. But I see that with the kids too. It's it seems so just, you know, why can't you just do this, do that, do the other? And there's just zero interest. There's no motivation. There's no reason for them to do it. So why do it? It has to be kind of like a panic time. And then people step into action, at least around here. That's how it seems to
go. Well, what it sounds like in that instance, Julie, is that urgency is the motivator that at least sounds like the adult in your life has been using. And so with our kids, urgency can be a great motivator. And Elaine always talks about the value of urgency, and if urgency is the only motivation tool you have in your toolbox or your kid has in their toolbox, it's exhausting because they're constantly waiting till the last minute and they're constantly frustrating the other people in their life. And they're, you know, it's hard, you know? So again, it's about building that toolbox of motivation rather than just relying on one particular one, whether it's the Xbox or the urgency or the whatever else.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. Yep. Thank you for that, Julie.
Sure.
Other thoughts? Holly, what's up coming up for you?
Well, I'm hearing a lot of the same issues that we have at home, that the motivation changes from week to week. And like someone else said, he doesn't seem to put the pieces together. Like, if I do this, this will happen. I'll get to do this. Or he'll get fixated, not able to do something, and that will completely paralyze him, you know, to even start. If he perceives it to be something that is going to be so daunting that he's never going to get it done, even if it's, I mean, he can't figure out, like, time management. You know, he's skewed on that, but that's a big problem. Like, so just it's confirming to hear that other kids are doing the same thing, but frustrating as well.
Well, and so what you're identifying is that they're different parts of executive function, right? So it doesn't matter how much motivation is in place. If your child has an executive function challenge, you can motivate the heck out of them, and they still are going to struggle with getting something done. So it's a yes and. Make sure there's motivation in place, and make sure that you're getting to the bottom of what the executive function challenge is so you can help them to learn how to accommodate the executive function challenge. So give me an example, Holly, of a place where this comes up, this ties into your concerns.
I guess it his inability to do this kind of feeds my own anxiety, which is just a vicious cycle that that we can't seem to get out of. You know, I'm worried about, oh, he's got to turn this in because this is his grade, and he, you know, and when he's not buying into or when he's putting things off, I don't know. I guess I just need, it's as much work on me as it is on him. And the thought of keeping up this level of scaffolding for, you know, who knows how long is exhausting to me as well.
Well, and so I think that's a mindset piece of this, right? So it's about understanding that this is a marathon and not a sprint. And there are going to be some areas that you might be scaffolding even still for years, even though he's, you know, 17. And part of why you pick stuff that they have buy-in on is because you can start letting stuff go. And I think about my 19-year-old who this past year our focus has been on him getting up and out the door to work on time without me having to wake him up 17 times so that he's not late for work. And he's set a goal for himself. He wants to go to bed at midnight, and he wants, you know, so he's really working on it. And I've had to scaffold through the process, and I have to check on him and make sure that I, you know, text him at 10 o'clock to make sure he got up at 9:30 or whatever it is, because he's becoming more and more independent. But the amount of times that I text him and he's still in bed has gone down from like 9 days out of 10 to 1 day out of 10. Right. And so it's about looking at the increasing independence rather than the you know, and the progress rather than focusing on the outcome not being there yet. Holly, does that resonate with you?
Yeah. My husband tells me all the time, we just need to step back and how the difference that has happened in the last, you know, 4 years or whatever. It's hard when you're in the middle of it to see. So we have to take a step back and look at the progress.
Yeah, and there's probably a lot of areas where he has become more independent or more able to be independent. And
right.
And it's about kind of finding those home runs and celebrating them and say, wow, you know, I was thinking about the fact that, you know, a year ago, you know, this is where you were and look at what you're doing now. It's just amazing.
And that really works for him. Something that we got from, I can't remember where, the three positives to the negative type thing. And
yep.
I tried that last week and it really worked for him. It, you know, it was just one of those, wow, this is, you know, a strategy that we need to hang on to, because we do recognize we get in that negative cycle with both of our kids, and it's just, you know, they have so many opportunities to not do the right thing. We have to look for the good.
Yeah. Yep. Well, and I love that you're focusing in on that and that positivity piece. The key there is that it strengthens the relationship so that you can stay in collaborative problem solving, right? Because that's really it. It's like that when the conflict starts, your ability to work with them changes. And so they want you out completely. They want you at level 4 and they're not ready for you to be at level 4. And that's where some of this conflict happens.
Right.
So other thoughts? So Julie, let me go back to you. So Julie, I'm going to go back to you. It's like when you think about the, you were taking a bite when you were trying to take aim. When you think about this and about taking aim, what comes up as some areas to kind of look at motivation and buy-in for you?
I think homework for my daughter is a place where there's something not working right there, and there's not a lot of motivation to do it. It doesn't, she says, oh, it doesn't matter. You know, if I don't do my work, it doesn't matter. So there's no urgency, none of those things that'll make her want to do it.
So it may be that, so I guess the question is, if she's not seeing the intrinsic motivation or the obvious
uh-huh.
motivation, which is if you don't do your homework, you know, you don't get good grades in the class. If you don't get good grades in the class, you don't get to go into the class. I mean, so a lot of times with grades and homework and things like that, the payoff is so far away that their ability to connect
mm-hmm.
with it is limited. I mean, they may even say,
right.
I want to go to Harvard. But their ability to go, well, if I don't do my homework, I'm not going to be able to go to Harvard in 3 years, is just not
yes.
there. So how do you create some incentive and some motivation now that might help her to focus in a different way?
Well, today they're on spring break, and so she wanted to have a friend come over. I said, well, you've got to do these chores. Well, she's up doing the chores because there's motivation there. we've tried with my son, we tried money as a motivator, and that seemed to work okay. But it's not, I mean, in a way it is kind of like the real world. You do well, you get probably get a better job and get paid better.
Mm-hmm.
But that's kind of far away too. That's, you know, at the end of the term, I get my grade. So
right.
a shorter
right.
term, I guess it's still
so maybe
that
you need to put something in external, right? So it's this sort of, if, you know.
Yeah.
If you get your homework done, you know, whatever, but you want to make sure it's realistic. You want to make sure, I mean, all of those things are true about motivation, so that it's time sensitive and that it's realistic, right? So it's,
mm-hmm. yeah.
it may not be realistic for her to do her homework completely independently, But mm-hmm. what do you say? So let's go backwards to the homework, and it doesn't matter. So get curious. What are three things that might be going on for her that leads to this comment that homework doesn't matter?
It could be a few different things. One is that their school or her school now, they don't put a big emphasis on homework. The idea is to mostly just get your work done during the day, and they don't want to send homework mm-hmm. home. So maybe she feels like I've done my time. I've done my how many hours a day, and I shouldn't have to do it after.
Okay.
My son, when he was there, he blew off a bunch of assignments, and there was no consequence.
Okay,
from
so
the
there's
teachers
a model.
Or,
yeah, okay.
Right, or at home, really, there wasn't really a consequence because there wasn't. And, you know, there's the draw of being on her phone or watching TV. That's more exciting and interesting and fun than homework. So those
more
are three
interesting
things.
Stuff. That makes sense. Okay. So
yeah.
What's important for you about her doing her homework?
Well, now with a ninth grader, I know that she's going to have to know how to do homework. She's going to have to be practiced and have some routines in place. We didn't have those for my son. And so I felt like he was kind of behind the eight ball on that. So really in preparation for the future, that's what my motivation is. I'm not so worried about what her grades are. But
So hang on a second. So what's the skill that she would have? That's great insight, which is you're really trying to help her build a skill that's going to serve her in the future. What's the skill?
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe it's time management. I mean, you know, you work here and then you play there, and there's you have to carve out time for both.
Mhm.
And
so it's the skill of figuring out, of balancing what you have to do with what you want to do. Is that kind of the?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So I guess the question is, if you either had that conversation with her and said, you know, I noticed that sometimes it's hard for you to balance the stuff that you have to do with the stuff you want to do.
Yeah.
What do you notice? And, you know, how interested are you in working together to kind of focus on that and just kind of see whether you have mm-hmm. the buy-in there as a place to start? How do you think that would play out?
Well, she tends to be quiet, and so she might say, I don't know. That might be that almost is like her go-to. I don't know. What's the assignment? I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. And she'll play.
So
like
I'm going to challenge you Julie, to go read my blog about what to do when your kid says, I don't know, Mom.
Okay. Okay. I'll do it.
So and I think that, so part of it is, and it's something I just did with you. So I did it to model, is I didn't say, you know, what's going on with her that's making it mm-hmm. hard. I said, what are three things that might be going on? Right. So mm-hmm. it's that sort of, what are three things you might try? Or what, you know, it's that sort of kind of giving them, you know, holding them accountable for coming up with, if I ask you to come up with three things, you're going to at least come mm-hmm. back to me with two.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so part of this is about figuring out where her buy-in is. And part of it is figuring out what's really going on underneath it.
Yeah. And that's what I've been focusing on over and over again in these calls, is my relationship with her, because there's just something that's not, there's not a closeness or an openness with her that I feel. And so that's something I would like to improve.
Well, and here's the thing. I'm going to challenge you to kind of notice what's different. It's the same sort of thing. It's like, tell me three things that are different this year than they were last year, because you've been working hard at this stuff, Julie.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. What are a few things that you notice that are different?
Oh, you really want me to answer? Okay.
I really do.
Okay. Well, it's not really different, but it's just amplified or gotten bigger. My son's challenges, you know, he's dabbled in drugs and he got in a fight at school and things like that. So that's kind of getting bigger. And so there's a lot of tension around the house around that. And I know I spend more time, more energy on him. But I always have done that, unfortunately. And another difference is there's been some weird stuff going on with my family. And so that's kind of come into like my birth, you know, my parents and stuff. And so that's kind of colored a lot
it's
of
been harder for you to do that. Yeah.
The conversations. Yeah. So
yeah,
that's
you've
kind
had
of
some
like,
distractions.
Yeah. A lot of distractions. I would say those are kind of the main,
okay. So what's better than it was a year ago?
We're out of debt. So that's, for me, that's better. It feels like there's less tension between me and Mark, so that's good.
Yeah.
With the
what
kids.
What about with your daughter? What about with your daughter?
Yeah,
what
I know. I'm trying to think.
It
was. I don't know.
Well,
I'm the
model.
I don't know.
Well, think about it for a minute, Julie. The first step is say, well, think about it for a minute. And then it's kind of like, mm-hmm. well, you know, go back and spend some time with it and maybe journal about it or think about it or talk to Mark about it and then come mm-hmm. back and let me know. Because I think that what ends up happening with a lot of us, Julie, I don't want to put you on the spot with this because I think we all do this, is this idea that we get so focused on the end point, and if we're not there yet, we don't notice the progress.
Yeah.
So it's like they haven't successfully launched. They're not doing everything on their own yet. So nothing's changed. And there's a lot of incremental progress that I'm sure is happening, particularly mm-hmm. in terms of strengthening your relationship. I bet that even if you're blowing up, you know, I don't know, I can't remember if you're a yeller or not, but it's like, you know, for me, it's like for a while it was like, well, I only yelled at my kids 4 days this week instead of 6 days.
Yeah.
You know, and that's progress. Right.
Yeah. I'll have
but
to
if
think
I,
on
but
it.
If I if my goal is to never yell at my kids and I'm not there, I'm going to judge myself based on whether I yelled at my kids and not on the fact that I yelled at them only 4 times this week instead of 6.
Right.
Yeah. So, I want to move us to wrap up. Any other last thoughts before we go to our closing questions? Okay, so I'm on page 47 of the workbook. So these are the 4 questions we ask at the end of every call. What did I focus on or pay most attention to today? What's my clarity or takeaway? What's an aha that I had? What's a realistic action step for me to take? And how do I set myself up for success? And so take a few notes, and I would love to hear from each of you at least 1 aha and 1 action item. And whenever you're ready, jump in.
This is Holly. I'm going to say my aha is that everybody has similar issues. And that's something that I really need because I feel like I'm surrounded by moms of perfect kids, you know, and so it's kind of like I'm always comparing my kids to other people's kids and our struggles to other people's struggles. And then what I really want to work on is to continue with that, the positive, and I think that we could get the buy-in from, you know, kind of focusing more on positives than always telling them, you know, what are you doing wrong or what did you forget?
Love that. Who else?
It's Susie. By the way, Linda had to go jump off the call a couple of minutes ago to pick up Gabriel.
Okay.
But I would say one aha was around the scaffolding and the need for scaffolding, and it's not wrong that he needs scaffolding, and that it's, I think we've been operating like it should be different by now, versus it is what it is, and there's no right timeline or wrong timeline. So he'll get whatever scaffolding he needs, whether we think that he should be beyond that or not. And the other was the realization that he really does like to spend time with us, and that may not always be the case, so I should take advantage of it while it's still that way.
How do you turn that into something concrete to do?
Well, I think, first of all, what I was going to say in action would be offering to do certain things with him, like folding the laundry, for example, but it could be anything, like let's do this together. And also talking to him about what he would like to do together versus by himself, or at least we help him get started on something and finishing it, but actually creating that with him rather than assuming that I know what he wants.
I love that. Well, and I don't think I said this today, but one of the things that came up yesterday in the younger kids group is that knowing what your child's love language is a great way to identify potential motivators. Because you may have a kid whose love language is quality time, or you may have kid whose words of appreciation, or you may have kid whose physical touch. And so a high five is what's going to motivate them for doing something, or a hug, or a thank you very much, or a, hey, here's, I got you a donut at the store because I really appreciated what you did for me earlier today. Or, you know, that, so kind of understanding and knowing their love languages can really be a helpful tool in figuring out motivation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Cool. Awesome. Julie, what about you?
That's interesting to me because I have put some thought into my son's love language, and I had thought about my daughter's love language a while ago, but I don't recall what it is. And so I would like to refresh my memory on that. Because I know that you're right. If that's going to be one of those keys to getting her moving forward, you know, in whatever it is, whatever piece of life we need to push her forward on or help her move forward on. So concrete. So I think I'll just look up the love languages and refresh my memory because I think there's a separate one for kids, right? That kind of describes how it works in kids.
Yeah, it's a pretty cool, you know, and your kids are old enough. Our kids are all old enough that they could take that assessment and it'll give them a sense of what their love language might be.
Yeah, okay. Cool. So I'll find that website and that's my action step. That's a good aha.
Awesome.
Too.
Love that.
Well, I've got to go back to work. Thanks, guys.
All right. Thanks, everybody. We are off. So next week is a office hour call, and then we've got spring break, and we've got PSS the week after that. So the next PSS call will be the week of April. Wait, am I doing the math right? 1, 2, 3. Week of April 8th is the next time we have a PSS call.
Okay.
Thanks, everybody.
Thanks. Bye.